Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for the Buckhead Business Radio Show.
Good morning, Atlanta and Buckhead. Rich Kasson over here for Buckhead Business Radio X. We have an exciting crowd in the studio this morning. We are packed, sitting room only, actually, right? That's a line I can't use again, dang it. All right, here we go. So I'm excited with our lineup here this morning. We've got some great people. We're going to be talking about crowdfunding, about coaching, about strategies with your business, about video and audio animation, pretty much the whole spectrum. We've got some great lineup here. So let's jump right into it. It's my pleasure to introduce our co-host here this morning, Johnny Walker. Right, Johnny? And how many times a day do you get, like, Rich Casanova is my name? Is that your real name, Johnny Walker?
Yes, it is. And all the time, every
yeah,
day.
It's always good stuff, though, right? Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Our names could be a whole lot worse, right?
Yeah. That's right.
Okay, so first up, a quick introduction for Johnny. He's an executive coach with both individuals and companies. Through coaching, he's been able to assist professionals and teams to navigate through difficult changes in company culture. That's a big thing right now, right?
Oh, yes, sir.
I mean, that's the face and the method of operation of any organization and how they're branded and how they're known and is their culture. Also increasing job satisfaction, job performance, reaching goals faster. Is that possible?
Yes.
I'm all over that, yeah. Like I have a friend that says, slow is good, but faster is better, right?
That's right.
All right, and increased life satisfaction. I mean, that's the holy grail, right? Is like it's great with business, but you're talking about the whole package, which I believe in. A master's degree in agency consulting, bachelor's degree in both religion and society. That's interesting. Been counseling and coaching clients for over 20 years. And you're only 27. Wow,
that's great. Yeah, right. I started when I was 7.
Right, exactly. So, and use the integrity selling model. Went from law enforcement, and I know I had you at a speaker at an event that I was hosting a while back, and very intriguing your law enforcement background. And also 18, and within 18 months was a number one sales position in his division nationwide. That's impressive. Wow, I'm glad I'm not. No one's introducing me this morning. Yeah. All right, so Johnny, just a couple of quick questions.
Sure.
Now, this Johnny Walker, and it's important to say .co, right?
Correct.
There's some other company out there that has the .com. I don't know who, but yeah.
Yes.
But
yes.
We've all enjoyed that culture, right?
The Scotch
so,
people.
Yeah. So tell us about services you offer.
At JohnnyWalker.co, we do executive coaching. We also do training and facilitation for companies. So we're able to work with individuals who want to take what they're doing to the next level, entrepreneurs, as well as large companies that want to change a culture. Our partnership with Integrity Solutions enables us to go in and meet the needs of the larger clients utilizing programs such as Integrity Selling,
right.
Integrity Service, and Integrity Coaching. So what we're able to do is create a customer-focused culture where the needs of the customer become more important than the needs of the company to sell a product. And people generally respond to that. And that's what I utilized when I left law enforcement and went into sales. I utilized the integrity selling process and was able to be to make it to number one in the nation in less than 18 months.
Now, that's impressive, obviously, right, as a sales trainer and coach to number one. But what about are you able to – you know, teach managers. I think that's kind of the secret sauce is being able to teach managers and supervisors to be able to coach their people, right? Because if you coach me as a manager, that's great. But how do you segue? Is that possible even?
Yes, it is. Integrity coaching, the model we utilize, is a structured conversation. The biggest problem we have in training today in leadership development is it's all conceptual. People go to trainings or they read a book and it's concept-oriented. And what we do is we teach those concepts, but we put it in a process where there's a structured conversation and there's structured coaching sessions and there's non-structured where you're walking around and you're talking with them, but you're always utilizing that same process as you're talking with them. And it's a focus on the employee. Just like you want the employee to focus on the customer's needs, the manager's customer is that employee. And they need to be focusing on their needs. We're going to be talking a little bit about today from the bios I've read about the personal life and the professional life and how those intermix. But to develop the employee professionally, what are their goals personally and professionally, helping them to achieve those. And when a manager does that and understands how to have those conversations, that employee's achievement drive increases and the productivity increases as well.
And I think one of the buzzwords is in any organization is behavioral style, right? So how do you address that, or how do you challenges or solutions do you offer?
Well, what we mean by behavior styles, it's not a personality of the person that you're talking to, but they're outward behaviors that indicate how they like to be communicated with. So in all of our structured trainings and processes, we teach people how to not label their customers, but how to identify how they're communicating today so that you can communicate on their level. It's almost as if you spoke fluent Spanish and English and you had a Latino person that spoke fluent Spanish and broken English. What language would you use? And the answer is you would use the Spanish. And the reason is because you'd want to communicate more effectively. So these behavior styles, the talker, the doer, the supporter, the controller, when you recognize those behavior styles, it makes it a lot easier to give them the information the way they want to receive it.
Excellent, excellent. Hope everyone's, our listeners are taking great notes here this morning. Good stuff. And it's all free, right? I mean, it can't get much better than that.
That's right.
So, Johnny, tell our listeners, how would they get in touch with you to find out more about your services and offerings?
Well, they can reach me on the internet at Johnny Walker. It's J-O-H-N-N-Y, walker.co. And my phone number is 770-456-5547.
Excellent. All right. Well, thanks for that intro and learning a little bit more about yourself. And again, excited to have you here as a co-host. And so I'm going to have you do the honors and introduce our first guest here this morning.
Great. Well, this morning we have Steve Keck with us, and he's been an advocate for business owners his entire career. Inspired by the creativity and ingenuity he saw, Steve worked through the banking systems, the banking industry, to help clients navigate the process of financing and cash management. That's a big undertaking, Steve. He began to see each office he worked with as a relational sphere where clients could solve problems for clients and build stronger community. In intrinsically developing relational maps and business networks, Steve realized that helping business owners solve their non-banking related problems often stabilized their business finances and improved the lives of the owners and their employees. And thus this idea was born. He is, as the chief navigation officer, Steve created a methodology to identify what is needed to foster a business idea, bring resources to protect it, and ultimately stabilize that idea for greater profitability. The primary focus of his methodology filters through the belief that business success should not rob the personal lives of the business owner or their employees. He's a graduate from Georgia Tech with a degree in industrial management and finance, and he became a branch manager 14 months into a banking career. That's very impressive. He spent a decade as the branch turnaround specialist, taking those struggling banks, those branches, and turning them around and putting them on top production trajectories. The last several years, he focused specifically with business owners as a business cash strategist, SBA lender, helping clients navigate the recession. He has watched firsthand how difficult the lending environment has been for business owners and teaches his clients how to navigate it. Steve, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me.
So, Steve, tell me a little bit about where you see the business financial issues today for these business owners.
Basically, over the last 5 years, every business has gone through some sort of structural change, some sort of environmental issues, and it's become real apparent that it's become more complex from a banking standpoint to get financing. A lot of the conversations that I hear went from, I need a loan for X, to what do I need to do to get a loan for X?
Wow.
And so I kind of really took that in heart and went forward in trying to help a business owner understand what steps are needed. And as we were talking before, I realized that most business owners were having other issues that were obstructing their ability to get financing. And so I spent a lot of time talking with them about what was getting in the way, what were the obstacles. And I found a few things that came up. It was the first two things really were the design of the company and the culture. If you started as a two-person operation, but now you have 20 employees, chances are you still look like a two-person operation.
Right.
And you just, and trying to funnel all that information through those single two-person decision makers can really obstruct an ability to make revenue, which, of course, makes you unable to get financing. And so I would help a company kind of understand the viewpoint of how to move from that business owner to operating more like a company of a larger size that has a CEO, has a board, you know, that has a bunch of trusted resources outside.
Excellent. Mm-hmm. Now tell me about the concept of bank paralysis.
This is basically what I felt most companies were falling into. When the recession hit, the back office underwriting departments, the people who say yes to your lending, had to spend 5 years working on what was wrong with what was in the house, what was already in the bank. And so they basically froze up a lot of things. Certain industries got kicked out, certain banks, I'm not doing that industry anymore, we have too many problems, we're just not doing it. No matter, you could be the shining star, doesn't matter, they're not going to talk to you. But the CEO and the sales team understand that they're coming out of a recession. And so they set a large goal, say, hey, we're going to grow 20% this year. We've been out of the recession. We're seeing all these great things. Right. Well, they forget to tell credit, who's still
That's the Scooby-Doo moment right there. Yeah.
And so what happened was, is there's a lot of banks and a lot of were, you know, given the sales team, go outside, get to know everybody, tell everybody we're doing stuff. And then we gather all these financials, which all had a little bit of issues to them, and then they just kept getting no after no after no. And a business owner doesn't have time to waste getting financials, going to a bank, thinking, you know, they need guidance on how to do that, because they make revenue doing something else. And so
you're able to go in there.
And that's what I do, is my job is to know which banks are going to be comfortable with what type of industry, which company is going to, which type of financing is right for you, because a lot of times you'll go to a bank and you're really not in bank financing. You're in alternative lending of some sort because of certain issues, or you're growing too fast. And most businesses run out of cash on the way up.
Now, growing too fast, most people would think that's not a problem, but you're saying that it can be.
I've seen most of the businesses that fail die because they went up too fast.
Right.
They grew too fast.
That's important to understand.
Crash and burn. But and according to your bio, your title is Chief Navigation Officer, right?
So, exactly.
That fits the bill right there. And now, Steve, we've known each other for quite a while. We
yes,
go back
we
to BNI days, and you were the president of the chapter, and I was just a lowly member or whatever. Yeah, just hanging out, just taking up space. But we've had some great times and learned a lot from that organization and the networking there. But in your current business, and I knew you in your banking business and what have you, but in your current business, talk to us about converting. How do you go about converting a business owner to a CEO? Is that a mindset or a title? Or, I mean, what's the process, or what are some of the criteria?
It's really a custom issue for each business owner. Some business owners will either want to make decisions based on wealth, and others will want to make decisions based on control. And often they counteract each other. So if you want to maintain control of your product, often you're going to spend more time trying to maintain control of who gets what information, that sort of thing. Someone who's trying to build wealth knows that they have to give up a lot of stuff, bring in a lot of resources, spend a little extra money, and make different investments in order to gain that wealth. So, because you turn a company into a $100 million company and you only have 5% of it, well, that's still good if you've got a $10 million company and you own 80% of it. It just has a different payout, even though, you know. So as helping a company understand how they want to grow will help them understand what kind of issues they're going to run into and what kind of structure makes most sense for them. And so converting from a business owner to a CEO is, what type of chief financial officer do you need? What type of operations do you need? What type of, you know, marketing system do you need to put in place, because you need to focus on what your strengths are?
It's often been said that business owners sometimes make terrible CEOs.
Yes.
What about the need to understand when to fire yourself as the CEO and actually hire one?
It really comes down to if a business owner is legitimately interested in trying to separate themselves and their personal life from this business, which is taking 90 to 120 hours a week, mm-hmm. and they really want to make that change, it will become apparent through the process of actually growing. I don't want to do that. I'm not the face of this. I'd rather be the technician. I went to Georgia Tech. Half of my friends are, they like to be in the back room working on this stuff, right. Creating product and that sort of thing, and that's great. And so they need to hire a CEO.
But if they don't understand that process, if they're not utilizing someone like you, they don't know those factors, and they can actually torpedo their business by trying to be the CEO.
So, absolutely. Yeah. And then I can't tell, and then they come to me asking for financing. I was like, well, you don't make enough money because you're too busy trying to control everything, which is costing your revenue here. You need to let go of that.
Kind of ties into what your skill set is with that, you know, profiling of your personality and what you're best at. Yeah. And along that line, we talked a little bit earlier about culture of a company organization. How does one, as an individual organization, find their voice in today's business climate?
I think a lot of that really comes down to how a company wants to present itself. I mean, there's no thing where you have to be the only one in the market. There's no thing where you only have to be the first one in the market. You know, often sometimes becoming last is actually the best way because other companies have failed all the things that you can skip over.
Went to school on everybody else.
Yeah, exactly. So being last might actually be the best. It's just understanding how to differentiate yourself, and then and it's like in networking where you talk about how, you know, you need to niche your business. What do you specifically want to work on? And that sort of thing is transparently needed in every business, regardless of whether they're trying to build network or anything like that. Building a market is understanding exactly who you are, sticking with it, integrating your culture, and then creating a language around that particular brand. And when you create a language around that brand, it speaks and resonates just like you do. And so, like, people think of me when I walk into a room. For some reason, everybody likes to ask me if I work there. I say, you know.
Right. I get that a lot at Walmart, but that's a whole other thing.
The same
right?
thing. I do, too.
Yeah, I'll walk in. They'll be like, can you tell me where this? It's like, no, I don't work here, but pickles are on the third aisle.
That's
on the
right.
Line.
Right. That's right.
Here's the thing. Whenever you're at Target, never wear a red shirt. And when you're at Publix, never wear a green shirt.
That's
other
right.
than that, you're good, whatever.
But so but helping people understand that, you know, when I walk into a room that – people are going to ask me a question. Mm-hmm. Helps me understand what type of voice I'm projecting.
Do you think that a lot of young companies try to have too big a voice instead of, you know, they're trying to do too many different things instead of saying, this is what I do best?
I think so. I think that the problem is there's always the revenue issue on that. Uh-huh. As a small business, you're trying to make money any way you can, so you have to operate in a lot broader field. But at the same time, if you take the tighter, you know, a tighter niche and a very specific niche to that business, it's a longer road, but it becomes a more profitable road because over time, you know, if you can survive your first three to 5 years of doing that, you are that person.
And well, Johnny, what do you think? This is good stuff so far, whatever, well, right?
Excellent.
And we so, Steve, tell our listeners, what's the best way to get back in touch and find out more information about you and your adventure.
Okay. My website is srccnavigator.com. That's Steve Richard Charlie Navigator.com.
We're clear for landing now.
Yeah, clear for landing. Also, I'm very active on LinkedIn.
Okay.
That's a great way to meet me.
Awesome. All right. Well, thanks again, Steve, for being here. You can take a breather now and enjoy the rest of the show. So thanks again for being here. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Up next, we have Jim Hogan. And Jim Hogan Consulting LLC, what a great name for that business, right? That just fit, right? Was that how big was that focus group, right?
It took a while.
A lot of creativity in there, but wait till the creativity comes after.
But
there
it's all go. About branding, and we were talking about this identity thing, right?
He was saving the creativity for his client.
nice.
All the way, exactly.
So Jim runs a small business advisory group that develops and implements training programs for sales-driven organizations, helps companies integrate CRM technology into their sales cycle. For the small business executive, they offer facilitates mastermind groups. I want to find out more about mastermind, whatever. I've never been invited to one, but maybe that's another show. All right.
Or a therapy session.
I run my own every day under my head, yeah. So meanwhile, let's get back to Jim's intro. It's about Jim right now, yeah. So now his group helps tackle the tough problems facing every growing company. Jim's available to speak to companies, associations, civic organizations throughout the business networking mind gap between marketing and sales, the power of influence, personality, relationship selling, using DISC. All right. Jim's is twice published author through collaborative efforts, Improv to Improve Your Business. Love that one. Using the principles of improvisation to foster communication, creativity, and innovation. And also the 28-day thought diet. Is that diet
dot,
or
diet?
Okay, because there's just have a dot 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 here,
that
so
was
I was hoping.
Late last night typing.
Okay, yes, that's good. That's good to know. Whatever. Yeah.
So not we
have
just me.
Everybody relax. We have more than 28 days. Yeah. So he successfully completed the Ironman Florida Triathlon in November of 2012. Graduate from the University of Delaware with a BS in Business Administration. Jim's been married in Atlanta for a resident since 1992. All right. So Jim. Now, actually, Steve was just talking about LinkedIn, yep. So thanks for teeing that up. How? Yeah, absolutely. There's no extra money in there, Steve, but yeah. So how should someone engage in with the benefits of LinkedIn?
You know, everyone has talked about social media, and as powerful as that is, you still have to be active in that. If you had to choose one, any single one, LinkedIn is the one if you're in a business community. There is no question about that.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. You have total control over how people view you and how people are going to perceive you. And that first picture in their mind on what they read in that headline is what you do, is what they're going to remember, and it's what's going to draw them towards you. And if you don't, then they're not, and you have lost an opportunity.
Yeah, I think I once heard, I was at an event, they were talking about social media platforms, right? And they said, you know, Facebook is kind of like the backyard barbecue, and LinkedIn is like at the office, you know, desk and in a conference room. So, but sometimes people, don't understand the differences or whatever, right? So,
well, and it's an active situation, both outgoing and incoming. So you might have heard about inbound marketing. You can present yourself and people are coming to you from every other platform, whether it's your website, whether it's a networking event. And when they do that, the first thing they're going to do is they're going to Google you.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So if you have a powerful LinkedIn profile, that's probably one of the first things that can come up.
Huh.
And when that does, they're going to click there and they're going to go find you. Or if they're in a business and met you at a business meeting, they're going to go straight to LinkedIn and look you up. And they're going to go, what did he say? What did he present? Is everything in sync
right.
between
consistent.
The visual and the web?
One of the things that always blows my mind about LinkedIn is how many times I've say maybe six or almost seven times out of ten, I'll go to someone's LinkedIn profile and their jobs are from two jobs ago are still posted. Are their Twitter and their Facebook and their webs, even their company website link is not going to the right, is going to their former company, which is now their competitor. I mean, I'm just astounded. I mean, you'd be surprised how much incorrect information is not updated, and that is the current Rolodex way to find people.
And it's not hard.
Yeah, exactly.
And it doesn't take a lot of time. People get overwhelmed if they take one step at a time. If they spent 15 minutes a day searching for that best client or somebody who they had met and learn about them and decide if they want to engage or not. And the search features on there, even on the basic account, which is free.
Exactly, yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, your presentation to the world, you can find out an awful lot about an awful lot of people.
Now, you mentioned about, as a speaker, one of your speeches is entitled Your Speechers.
Yes.
We'll talk afterwards, whatever. Yeah.
Has to do with
one of your speeches is entitled The Zen of Networking. Love that title. Tell us a little bit more about that.
Well, it goes back to simplicity, and Zen is just being one with, you know, the world and energy and all those things. And people make LinkedIn and networking more difficult than it ever has to be. If you are going to spend the time and the money to get out of your office, go see somebody, maybe buy a dinner and an event or whatever else, and you haven't pre-planned just a little bit to know who might be there, because a lot of the events, Rich, I know your events out there, you can go research who is going to be there, and you can say, is it worth going to that one? How many do you go to? You have to pick the ones where your best client most likely will be, or even better yet, bring your best client.
Absolutely.
Because that third-party sale is so much easier to do. If I brought Rich, actually anybody can bring Rich to an event.
You got to buy me beer and dinner, though, but yeah, other than that, I'm pretty cheap.
What?
Cheap date.
But it's worth it because Rich probably knows us so well that he can articulate to somebody else, well, let me tell you about Jim. And he would go into my, not 60 second, he'd probably give him a 3-minute dissertation on why they need to engage with me and get to know me more.
Right. Well, I tell people my elevator pitch is more like taking the escalator or sometimes the stairs, right? So depends on what floor you're on.
Hitting the emergency button.
But yeah, I mean, that is so powerful, that third party endorsement or whatever, right? Yep. And it's that's genius. Now, this idea of CRM technologies, I know that's a hot button for you and incorporating that into companies' sales cycle. So tell our listeners a little bit about CRM and how does the CRM help build that sales funnel?
Well, and that all connects with using LinkedIn, because the people and everything in your database, if you are not consistently engaging with people, they forget about you. Social media can put your name out in the world and maybe somebody will come across it. If you have an update on LinkedIn, they may come across that. But what if your computer on any given day told you that you were ignoring your best client? You haven't talked to him for 60 days, and you know that you need to be able to engage with that person. And it might even give you a reason to engage. And it gives you a stream of information, emails, notes that you've put in to remind you before you pick up that phone. Because we all forget about the phone. It's so easy just to send an email.
Yeah.
Before you pick up that phone and you call and say, I'm going to call Rich Casanova, and I'm going to remind him how important his invitation to me to speak at his net wining event was, and that I met three people, and I engaged two of them in future business. And I want him to know how important that is for me. Now I'm top of mind. I didn't have to remember, oh, I forgot to call Rich. It's telling me. And the cloud-based CRMs nowadays that don't have to be enterprise level are out there, and they're inexpensive, but you have to use them, and it's amazing.
And if you have them cloud-based, you have access anywhere you're located on the planet, right? You don't have to be at your tied to your desk.
Including your phone.
Right. And now, I think it was on your website or somewhere you had, I don't know if it's intended to be an acronym, PEAS. PEAS, is that?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Jim's giving me this blank look like, pardon me? Whatever, yeah. So it's a circle of action. Describe this plan, engage, adapt, and succeed.
Well, if you think about it, I mean, if you don't plan, and you can go back to network, you can go back to daily activities, whatever else it is, if you don't have a plan and you don't know where you're heading, it's hard to get there. You know, if that's the important part. If you plan well and you can engage somebody, you're going to engage them as deeply as possible. Mm-hmm. Not everyone is an A client. That's a different level of engagement that you're going to create. But that's part of the plan. And if you think about the adapt, that's adjustments, consistent adjustments. And if you follow that plan, engage, adapt, you will succeed on whatever goal that you had set. So it's a very simple process to go through. And I always go back to, you might get down to that, but I'm going to throw it out there. You mentioned my Ironman. That was probably the most intense thing I have ever done in my whole life. And it took, it was a plan, a one-year, 12-month plan to be able to cross that finish line down in Florida in November 2012. But that plan said, I have to follow my plan. I have to trust my training. And I had to adapt to environmental issues, my body, the race course, the heat, everything else, and you cross the finish line. Same thing in business.
I was about to ask you, so tell me how that relates to business a little more. You're saying it's that whole P's, plan, engage, adapt, succeed?
It sure does. It is for any – I'm going to go back to small business because that really is who my client base is. Somebody has to – when you are, you don't have an executive team of 12 people throwing their heads together, you still have to plan. And I was doing a training once, and we did this game called the paper game. So a group's of four people, and you hand them a sheet of paper just like those tripod boards, and you say, you have 20 feet away, and you say, here's two pieces of paper. You guys have to get from here around that dot on the far end of the floor and back to where you are without stepping on the floor. You have to use this paper. Get there. Go. Now, do people plan? They just go. All right? So we're timing them. and this is the paper game. So you finish and you do an evaluation, and you say, all right, the next thing we're going to do is, we're going to give you 30 seconds to plan. Can you improve what you did last time? Now, every single time that happens, they improve. We give them a third time to plan for a minute. Of course, the leaders show up, ideas come out, and you watch people systematically move from point to point and succeed much better by adapting to the environment and creating a better plan. And
it's kind of like
paper game.
I forget where I've heard this before, and you may have heard it as well, this strategy of, ready, fire, aim.
Right.
And normally it's, you don't think of that in that sequence, right? But it is, it's like kind of what you're saying. You got to get ready, which is your planning stage, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you engage, you actually fire, right? And then you aim afterwards. And it sounds counterintuitive, but that's that thing of adapting. So take action. A lot of people are kind of stuck in that ready phase forever and planning, and they never take action because their fear of, well, am I going to have all my ducks lined up? Is everything going to be perfect and, you know, perpendicular and everything else, right?
Paralysis by analysis.
Exactly.
I was right down that road. Yep.
So they fire, and then you slightly, you know, adjust as you go. So good stuff, right?
Absolutely. I want to back up and ask one question on the LinkedIn. You used a phrase, powerful, to have a powerful LinkedIn presence. Can you give just a few ideas of how people, I know you said 15 minutes a day, but what can we do to create that powerful LinkedIn presence?
Well, if I'm going to go straight to the headline, which is those words right after your photo. Well, let me go to the photo first.
Right. Good thing we're on radio, ladies and gentlemen. Here we go. Yeah.
It had better be a photo that represents you, not one sitting in front of your desk with your photos in the background, the selfie from the computer.
Right. Or three people around you and you're trying to figure out which one is Jim.
Worst case, although I love the NetWining, don't take your LinkedIn photo at the NetWining event with people around you and a glass of wine in your hand. That's number one. Two, the headline, that's not your company. That's what you do. You have control over that. I think it is 80 characters or something. It's bold, it's large. It's when people see that. We have an attention span of a gnat right now. So if they look at that, you go and hit that, that better be important. Then you have control over everything else in there on if you've engaged them at that point, why are they there to see you, your summaries. And everything better be a little bit about you with a little flair. Doesn't have to be braggy, but people will use it.
Excellent. Jim, tell the listeners how they can reach you and find you.
Sure. Web address is quite easy. That's jimhogan.net. That's .net. I think if you go to .com, you'll find a surfer.
Cool, dude. I'm there.
Yeah, exactly. And the problem is, yeah, he and I are competing for first place up on Jim Hogan. So we're working on that. And he's pretty popular, I can tell you.
Yeah.
But jimhogan.net or jimhogan@jimhogan.net is my email address. LinkedIn, quite easy to find me. I'm out there for that.
Excellent.
Great. Well, thanks again for being here. We really appreciate it. And hope to have you back again soon and get some good stuff. So
fabulous. Thank you.
Johnny, who do we have up next?
Yes, next we have Charles and Angela Perry. And I want to make sure I'm pronouncing this right. Is it Tior?
Yes, it is Tior Media.
Tior Media. And they believe on building better business on the foundation of faith. They've been providing original, effective web development solutions to their clients since 2009. And in that time, their staff has grown, including roles focused on design, programming, SEO, and internet marketing, project management, and business development. They offer fresh redesigns, complete site overhauls, new functionality, and everything in between. Their staff has the experience and answers necessary to get it right the first time.
Absolutely.
So we're glad to have you. So tell me a little bit, you know, there's a lot of companies out there that do what you do. Your price, what do you normally charge for your projects, and are you higher and lower than your competition?
I would say we're fairly priced. We're generally a little higher than some of your startups, but we fall in, you know, beneath the larger web.coms and GoDaddy's and stuff like that.
Okay. Now, there's a phrase out there, people get what they pay for.
Absolutely.
So your price may be a little bit higher than the startups, but they they're going to get what they pay for.
Well, I am a designer, coder, a geek by nature. So
you don't look like a geek.
It's good to know your talents. The geeks get all the pretty women. It
worked out.
It worked out. He's all like, yeah, man.
But, yeah, it definitely allows us to produce really high-quality work. Just because I make sure I see every single website, every single campaign that's put together. I physically touch it myself to make sure it's what my clients want, because it's so important to understand who my clients are, what businesses they operate, because I can't develop a website for a radio company like I did a restaurant. So it's very important to understand who that target audience is for that particular business.
Absolutely. Your turnaround time, what is a typical turnaround time for a small project, and how do you define a small project as well as a large, and how you define that?
Okay, a small project, I consider anything that's under $2,500, and they generally take about 2 to 4 weeks, depending on content, how much content needs to be added. Is there a product store? Is there different elements that need to be activated? Is there different type of sign-up forms and things that have to be put in?
What does a large project look like for you guys? What do you consider large?
A large project would be something on a scale of, what was the last large project that we actually did?
Like Info's a large. I'd say anything that's for us that's over 2,500, we consider a larger product, a project, just because the time it takes to get those details worked out.
A lot more moving parts and pieces to
Absolutely.
A project like that, yeah.
Now, a free email campaign.
I know.
I mean, I'm reading through the...
Don't get them started, Johnny.
Doing the prep work, you know, I'm going, ooh, free, you had me at free.
Yeah.
Free email campaign. What exactly is a free email campaign, and why would a business need, what would they need that for?
Well, first of all, I have to say socially, when you're talking your social networks, your social media, it's very important to have, I think it's very important to have a way for those people that you meet to have a lane to purchase your product, purchase your service. And doing that through social media tended not to work. So to have them sign up through email, we understand it's a lot more professional. And I understand I'm probably going to be getting some type of information for your service or your product. So having them sign up through an email gives them all of the needed information, and how we are allowed to do it for free. We set you up with one email campaign, one template, and we post your sign-up forms on your website, and also the content that goes in those sign-up forms. Now, that is, of course, doesn't cover your landing pages and right. all the dynamics.
That's where the asterisks come in. Right.
Would you add this as a free service to any project that you're doing?
Yes.
Okay, excellent.
But now, is that something you guys can either give the option to set it up and then they manage it, or that you all manage it for them as well? Or
Well, we set it up and they manage it.
Okay.
So you get the template, you get this beautiful layout where you're actually able to put it on your Facebook and your LinkedIn and all of your social media websites and attract that attention that you necessarily want.
And I think that's a great value, because a lot of times as business people, we get hung up, like we were talking earlier conversations about, you know, planning or taking action. And you have this grandiose ideas about, you know, email marketing, but
it's pretty simple.
It gets, yeah. yeah. And we, as a, well, to maybe not everybody,
for
it might
you,
be, for y'all are simple.
Yeah. simple
but if
you
set up the template and we can just kind of plug and play, mm-hmm. that's great.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. yeah.
So what would you say the sweet spot for your company is?
I would say we have two primarily sweet spots, and that would be design and video production. Mm. Design, because simply that's just where my start came from. Understanding code and understanding the language of the internet was my first.
good catch.
Yeah. Good catch.
Yeah, good catch. Yeah, be careful there. Yeah.
His wife is sitting next to him for those who cannot see through.
Exactly. Yeah.
But and also video production. We did a lot with commercials, commercial buildings, commercial property, and commercial businesses. We're actually working on something really cool that's going to impact the real estate industry very, mm-hmm. very large. Some software that allows us to use virtual video tours. And that should be coming out within the next 3 months, and that's going to be really, 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 really awesome.
Now, is that something?
How many reallys was that? I think that was, I counted five. Yeah,
four. Or at least four.
That's good stuff.
That video production, is that something that you guys can offer as an add-on to someone who already has a site, and you can add it to that versus having to redesign the entire thing?
Absolutely. If you already have a business that you need a commercial done for, say you have a product like we did, Bunkomatic, if you have a product that you need to, you know, visually articulate through your website, we'll set it up. We'll make sure the quality and the sound is absolutely perfect.
That's important.
And that it's getting interest. So not only do we place the video, we also do the marketing for the video itself through your social network and through your social connections if they allow us or if they want us to.
I'm just curious, what's the optimum length for a video?
Well, it all depends on industry. Okay. You know, somebody that's going to your website to hear you speak or listen to you, to watch you, you generally got about 4 to 5 minutes. Some products you got about 32 seconds.
Because a lot of times it's like you need a teaser video, like right. The trailer almost, mm-hmm. Oh, yes. Like a trailer to a 5 minute video, right?
Absolutely.
Because we talked about people's attention spans earlier, but
real quick.
But if you do that 30 second, mm-hmm. Then I can kind of get the gist of,
and I can watch more.
Yeah, yeah, is this something I want to pursue or look into it? Yeah. So you talked about the internet. I think you know, one of the biggest things right now is the mobile industry, how it's just pretty much taken over and dominated. And so tell us a little bit about that, about focusing on internet efforts as opposed to traditional devices or the mobile devices.
Yeah. Well, it's a fact that we're in 2014, yeah. And your mobile devices are extremely important. We use them at all situations, whether it be in home, out of the house. There were some studies even done that were showing people when they watch TV, they were checking on their phone.
That's crazy.
About the TV. And if you think about things like hashtags.
I've done that.
Yeah.
Every company wants you to follow them socially.
Right. You're watching the Super Bowl, but you also want to know what everybody else thinks, right, about the, yes, Super Bowl. Yeah.
So, and now that opportunity is here. So we just want to make sure we capitalize on that opportunity.
So, Angela, I don't know if you want to jump in and answer this, but you have a great spokesperson there.
Whatever. The spokesperson. Nice. I just own,
yeah. She's the pretty face.
Yeah, right. She's the face of the business. Good call, whatever, yeah. So, but either one of you, talk about what brought you to this point, and what's your backstory in creating the company or the business?
Oh, it started, I guess it was something that we both had wanted. I ended up starting out as an author while serving in the military. So I already knew that once I got out the military that I wanted to do something for myself. And from that point, he had already started working on, what was it, your second company by, yes, then?
Yeah.
Somewhere around there.
Right. He lost track after 10 or 12, whatever. Right.
Yeah, none of us have had anything before what we're doing now.
Right.
But when that happened and we ended up getting married, it was just like, okay, maybe we should work together. And most married couples don't work together. Don't ask me how we get along, but we do. We're,
that's
able,
great,
to actually separate from family to business, even though sometimes we're in bed and we're talking about business, but we know how to separate the two.
I have no comment there. Moving right along. Yeah.
So,
so Charles, back to Charles here.
Good call.
So, so, well, first of all, thank you for your service. What branch?
I was a veteran of the Navy.
Okay. Excellent. Thanks again.
Over 10 and a half years.
So this idea of team and videography, you know, what did your team do as far as as a videographer? We talked a little about the prices, but how's that compared to, like, amateur with everybody's smartphone technologies and all that stuff?
Well, I'm not opposed to, you know, video quality that you get from your iPad,
yeah,
or your iPhone. It's really about what the situation requires.
Right, right.
And for a lot of businesses, it's going to require quality video. So we want to make sure that everything is optimized for your mobile device. Does the video constrain itself? Does it look as good as it does on the desktop that it does on the phone?
Yeah, that's one thing I always try to wrap my head around is when you go to a website, how does the internet know that it's been going to a tablet as opposed to a desktop or a mobile? But analytic.
Good word.
Yeah, thank you. I've been practicing that all week. But so why does a company need this analytic?
Well, I'm sure Jim can probably attest to this. Well, because having data is very, very important. And very important. Knowing how long people stayed, what they came for, mm-hmm. why they came, what did they do when they were there? Who did they tell about your website? And you know, collecting all that information allows a business to go forth and provide marketing efforts that that produce a ROI that's positive.
Yeah, because there's no point in actually having them come to the site and then they leave and you don't know why they left.
Right.
You want mm-hmm. them to make that purchase. You have to have them engaged. So that's the whole point about your analytics. You want to make sure, okay, well, what did I do wrong this time to not make them purchase? Can I? What else? What avenue do I need to take?
I'm asking
next?
Myself that all the time. Right. What did I do wrong?
So back to the PEAS acronym. It's the be able to analyze whatever, right, and determine. So tell the folks, our listeners, how are they getting in touch with you all to find out about your services?
You can reach us on the World Wide Web.
The World Wide Web.
That's right.
I've heard about that. Yeah, I'm going to jump on board one of these days.
One
yeah.
of these days. It's new. it's TOR Media. That's TIORMEDIA. We have a studio in Snellville, and we have an office in Tucker, Georgia. And you can reach us via phone at 678-571-4573.
Excellent.
Thanks again for being here. We really enjoyed the conversation. I felt like I might have learned something or whatever. I didn't even intend to do that this morning. It was just by accident.
No,
it's good stuff. Yeah, thanks again.
Hang around smart people, Rich. You just never know what's
going
to happen.
I'm telling you, yeah. Just so... what do you think, Johnny, so far? Yeah, so far so good?
Oh, this is excellent.
Right?
I'm learning a ton. I was excited before I came in, and I really wish we had more time because I'm more and more questions keep hitting my mind.
Absolutely. So that having been said, we have our anchor man coming up here, not to be confused with...
Ron Burgundy.
Exactly.
Here we go.
It's bringing us home, Gene Wright. We just met, and Gene's a seasoned business executive, advisor to many small and mid-market businesses in the U.S. and abroad, founder and owner of multiple businesses. Gene has successfully raised capital and helped many clients prepare their businesses to attract investment capital, help realize their growth potential. Gene recently founded the Georgia Crowdfunding Association, and I love this topic. We'll have to delve into this because it's probably one of the hottest buzzwords and concepts that is it's kind of like taken on a life of its own, but I don't think the average person really understands all the nuances of it, which is a nonprofit organization focused on crowdfunding advocacy and providing education and awareness to Georgia's crowdfunding ecosystem, and serves as the GCA's executive director, trustee, and certified advisor with the Organization for Entrepreneurial Development. If you're writing down acronyms, that would be the OED. It's a nonprofit organization dedicated to providing local business assistance to Atlanta area businesses. Gene began his professional career with Pioneer Warehouse Club operator Macro in 1977, and based in the Netherlands. Mm-hmm. I got a buddy from Holland. First opening the warehouses, and then the sale to Kmart. I didn't realize you were, that's how I got my start in radio. I literally worked at Kmart, did the blue light specials or whatever on the PA, and then it was, but got fired later that week. But anyway, following Kmart, Gene joined the global consulting firm Anderson Consulting, associate partner responsible for facilitating discussion with Anderson's global client senior management teams, facilitated workshops focusing on growing and sustaining competitive advantages for companies such as Best Buy, Sears, McDonald's, Harley-Davidson, Target, Home Depot, JCPenney, a whole list of others. We'll post this all on the website, Gene, or whatever. Yeah, Costco. He's a graduate of University of West Georgia, Bachelor's of Business Administration, lives in the Buckhead area. All right, our home city here for the studio. And some of your specialties are crowdfunding, business organizational strategy, educational development, workforce performance. Wow, I'm glad no one's reading my resume. I got to update my LinkedIn profile, apparently.
So borrow some from Gene.
Yeah. Well, if we hadn't posted it, yeah, I should have done that beforehand. So, Gene, welcome to the show. Pleasure having you here this morning.
Thanks, Rich. This has really been a treat to be invited over and really sit in on this conversation with a lot of really great panelists.
Absolutely. So, North Star Consulting, tell us your backstory or how it became involved in crowdfunding.
It became our practice, obviously, focuses on B2C businesses, Rich, retailers, hoteliers, restaurants, anybody. We define retail as anybody who has an end user for a customer. And that also relates to consumer products companies who are trying to get their products placed with retailers like Home Depot or Sears and so on and so forth. And by default, our businesses all had crowds, which is really kind of a fundamental requirement if you're going to crowdfund. That's where it kind of comes from. And since our practice focuses in the mid-market, small-market area, we had clients very similar to the ones Steve described that were in danger of selling themselves broke. And we found that we had to get their financial house in order, and that if they were going to grow and scale, that they had to have the infrastructure and place to do so before we could source capital for them.
Now, I'm sure Johnny knows this, but help me out. Crowdfunding, is it pretty much literally as the phrase you'd imagine?
No, it's like you said, it's one of the most difficult things in the world to describe at this particular point in time because it's so new.
Right.
It's really not new. I mean, when you stop and think about it, churches have been crowdfunding for centuries.
That's right.
That's true.
But and all of us around the table probably at one time or another have helped a small business with a loan or a family get started or somebody in the neighborhood fund a project or buy Girl Scout cookies. Or, I mean, crowdfunding has got actually has become popular because of two recent additions to the recipe, the Internet and social media. Mm-hmm. Which allowed communities to move from being physical communities to virtual communities.
Way beyond their boundaries.
Way beyond the boundaries.
The geography. I don't know if you know this story, but I guess one of the early on crowdfunding scenarios in America was the Statue of Liberty.
Right, with Pulitzer.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, what happened was that France donated the Statue of Liberty to the United States, and our government apparently was in about the same shape then as it is now. Because when the statue got here...
We don't talk politics here, Gene, so yeah.
They found that they didn't have the money to fund to build the platform.
The platform.
So Pulitzer decided that he would raise money from residents in the city of New York to basically build the platform for which the Statue of Liberty now stands.
Yeah.
So they can tax it?
They're still taxing it. That's what we're still paying for today.
Giuliani,
okay, so now how big is this the market for crowdfunding?
Well, the market for crowdfunding last year, 2013, the last numbers I saw, were around $5 billion. Mm. And there were about 1.1 million crowdfund campaigns that were conducted worldwide.
Wow.
So we think that crowdfunding is still in the first or second inning. And as you said earlier, one of the things that we're so happy about in being in the space is that there's a tremendous amount of innovation going on in terms of what gets crowdfunded, how it gets crowdfunded, and what makes up a successful crowdfund strategy, campaign, execution, et cetera. So we're fascinated. Rich, we're seeing inquiries from museums that want to crowdfund to build a physical space, to mobile apps, to Nutra pharmaceuticals, to natural health food stores and pet food stores that want to expand. And so we're seeing a lot of very interesting opportunities to help business owners find funding to get to the next level.
Well, I mean, it's such a great concept. Is if for businesses or organizations, nonprofit or profit, that have their fan base, you know, ask them to kind of step up and say, "Hey, be a part of this," and they feel, I think, a sense of ownership, right?
Right.
And it kind of gets those people behind your effort, your product, or now this idea of how many funding models do you figure exist today?
Well, we're seeing a lot of new models, but as of right now, I would say there are five that are pretty popular. I mean, you can raise money through donations, like the Red Cross mm-hmm. or a museum. You can raise money by lending. Most people have heard of Lending Club, Prosper. There's a lot of peer-to-peer lending that's going on where small businesses can get access to capital by other small individuals who will make them loans. There is a reward-based crowdfunding, which is very popular in our space, where you get a reward for a cause or a project.
Those are like the Indiegogos and the Kickstarters?
And the Kickstarters. Yeah, Kickstarter's more reward-based.
Right.
Indiegogo's more donation-based. As a matter of fact, there are about 800 platforms that exist around the world right now, and helping our clients navigate to the right platform where people are interested is a project that or a task that keeps a lot of our researchers busy.
Well, one of the cool things I've noticed, and just from a civilian standpoint, is what's going on here in Atlanta. I mean, obviously, mm-hmm. you're probably much more keyed in on it, but I mean, obviously Georgia Tech, but you have right here in Buckhead, and where our studio mm-hmm. is located, you have the Atlanta Tech Village, right? Which is just amazing innovation going on right there, and that's just a microcosm of what's happening. But it's a lot of people call it the new Silicon Valley, or like the Silicon Valley of the East or South, right? I mean, it's just a
That's right, and you bring a really great example of how Atlanta's organized through the ATA, Atlanta
right.
Technology Angels, AT
and TAG
and TAG, mm-hmm. Which they're huge supporters of the technology sector. But I would submit that there are a lot of other sectors outside tech that have done quite well with crowdfunding.
Well, you look at the Shark Tank or whatever, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing what happens there, the transactions, the lives that are changed, and that products that come out of nowhere and become an overnight success, and fortunes are made in the millions and tens of millions of dollars. Sure. Nothing to do with technology, right?
Nothing to do with technology. I mean, you know, we've heard of let me give you a couple of very interesting examples of crowdfunding. There are people now, students now, that are going on websites to crowdfund their education.
Wow.
And they're looking for investors and backers to get them through Harvard.
Man, why didn't we have that one?
And they're
What about paying off your college?
Yeah, that was your dad.
Back in the day, that was your dad and your mom, whatever. Yeah. Now they're like.
A lot of industries are doing that. I know my sister-in-law, physical therapist, she wanted to go to physical therapy school, and they. You know, there were companies out there, organizations that said, "We'll pay for it if you work for us for X number of years."
Right, and some of the models we've seen, the students who get the funding agree to give a percentage of their income for the next 10 to 15 years, and it's all negotiable. So you're seeing films financed. You're seeing. One of the examples that we were involved in was a small South Georgia town wanted a Panera Bakery, and they wouldn't have gotten a Panera Bakery. They found a franchisee, but the franchisee, using a royalty-based crowdfund campaign, was able to put together the funding for fixtures and equipment to bring a Panera to a local
community. So how much dough did they raise?
I saw that smile. I saw that coming a mile away.
Johnny, you better take it from here.
Right.
I'm out of control.
Hey, Gene, I've got a question. You know, I think the listeners would be glad to hear that Georgia is become a national leader in crowdfunding. How did that happen?
Well, early on, and actually before the Jobs Act was passed in 2012 that really enabled crowdfunding under the Obama administration, Georgia had passed a law allowing, for the very first time, non-accredited investors to participate in private placements. And that was historic at the time it was done because Kansas was the only state in the United States that had such a rule. What that did, in effect, was increase the investor pool in Georgia by about 87%.
Oh, wow.
And now one of our major tasks, is really working with non-accredited investors to get into the space in a way that's safe. And it's hard enough for a seasoned angel investor to pick a winner.
Right. Well, let me ask this last question. How can crowdfunding help our business, our cause, or project to get funded?
Well, I think if you look at the elements to the companies and causes and projects that have successfully funded, they all have a core of common attributes. Number one, they have a crowd. You know, so
very important part. Piece.
It's very, 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 very important. Most are in revenue, so they have a tangible, good product or service. Third, they have a great video. Video really communicates the authenticity and reality of the of the situation. Fourth, they have a great social media community. It may not be LinkedIn. In our case, we work with four or five different platforms.
What else besides Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, probably Instagram, I guess?
Instagram, Pinterest. It depends on, again,
the product, what their widget is, right?
What the widget is, what the donor is, the age and demographics
and the audience,
of the donor, and whatever the crowd is. And for a museum, it's a donor. So we have to look at
that audience,
the demographics of donors, to know how to appeal to a particular target segment, which is virtual.
That's excellent.
Cool. So, Gene, how do our audience, our listeners, get in touch with you and find out more about this crowdfunding, this mystery?
Right.
Solve the mystery.
Solve the mystery. Yeah. Well, they can visit our website at www.instar consulting.biz and reach us that way by appointment, or simply call at 404-908-5561.
Now, do you have any events that people could attend or whatever, or is it mostly kind of individual consulting?
We do host a crowdfunding event. Last year we did Crowd West in conjunction with the University of West Georgia and the Burson Center in Carrollton. We'll be doing that again this year. And the 2nd of May, we'll be live from the Cobb Galleria.
Oh, cool.
With a full day education content for nonprofits, municipalities, and for for-profit businesses.
And those events will be on your site?
Yes.
Awesome. Well, thanks again, Gene. Great topic. It's definitely one of the hottest buzzwords and things for people that want to jump on board but can't quite figure out all the moving parts and pieces to it. So appreciate you educating our listeners and our audience here in the studio on this as well. Want to thank all of our guests for being here this morning on another edition of Buckhead Business Radio X. I'm Rich Casanova, and Johnny Walker, yes, that's his real name. Johnny, yes, is his real name, Walker, .co. Thanks for being here, Johnny.
Thank you.
Appreciate everyone, and we'll see you again next week on Tuesday at 10 a.m.